Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for October 2nd, 2017. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Good evening, David, and good evening, everyone. Tonight we have a very special guest, Amy Odom, the Director of Litigation of one of the most influential groups in the country in terms of veterans' benefits and advocacy on behalf of veterans, the National Veterans Legal Services Program. But before she joins us in a moment, I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Yes, and before we start, feel it necessary to offer our condolences to all the victims and the families of the tragedy in Las Vegas last night. It's a massacre beyond what words can describe. It's a heartbreaking tragedy, and we certainly offer our condolences, our thoughts, and our prayers for everyone that's suffered because of that. We have an excellent show for you tonight that we've been planning for weeks, and we'll begin with that. So I'll start with the introduction of our special guest tonight. Amy F. Odom is the Director of Litigation for the National Veterans Legal Services Program. As a Director of Litigation, she represents veterans and their families before the United States Court of Appeals for Veteran Claims and other federal courts. And she trains, develops, and supervises other program staff attorneys. Her practice also involves mentoring and advising pro bono attorneys, those attorneys that work for no fee, who represent veterans and survivors through the National Veterans Legal Services Program, Lawyers Serving Warriors Program, as well as pro bono attorneys representing appellants through the Veterans Consortium Pro Bono Program. She has served as the treasurer of the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims Bar Association and is vice chair of the American Bar Association Section of Administrative Law and Regulatory Practice Veterans Affairs Committee. She is an expert on VA benefits for disabilities caused by military sexual trauma. Her achievements include contributions to many veterans publications, as well as to several editions of what many, including myself, consider the finest publication on veterans issues in the country, which is the Veterans Benefit Manual. Prior to joining the National Veterans Legal Services Program in 2008, Ms. Odom served as an attorney advisor in the United States Department of Labor Office of Administrative Law Judges. She's a graduate of one of the finest law schools in the country, my alma mater, University of Florida College of Law, where she competed on the school's moot court team and served as a public interest fellow with the Center for Government Responsibility. She also earned her undergraduate degree from the University of Florida. So without further ado, I welcome Amy Odom to the Veterans News Hour tonight. How are you, Amy?
I'm well. Thanks so much for having me again, and I'm so thrilled to be back.
Well, it's our privilege. We have lots to talk about tonight, but for the benefit of our listeners, I know you were on the show about 6 months ago, but for the benefit of perhaps the new listeners, if we could begin with just a quick overview of the National Veterans Legal Services Program and some of its current activities and projects, and then we'll talk about some other current events.
Sure. So National Veterans Legal Services Program is a nonprofit organization based out of Washington, D.C. We do lots of stuff to help veterans, their family members, and active duty service members. In my shop, we take appeals from the Department of Veterans Affairs Board of Veterans Appeals to the Veterans Court. so that veterans can get their day in court when they have an adverse VA decision on benefits. We also litigate different class actions before other federal courts. We're well known for our work on a class action lawsuit called NEMER involving Agent Orange benefits for Vietnam veterans. In addition to that, we train and mentor other veterans advocates, and we also have a division called Lawyer Serving Warriors, where we take a variety of cases, including military medical retirement cases, discharge upgrade cases, cases involving combat-related special compensation, and military sexual trauma cases. And we work with our network of pro bono partners, other lawyers who want to help veterans and work with them in getting successful outcomes in those cases for veterans, family members, and active duty military.
Well, that's a great overview, and I appreciate it. I've been a fan of the National Veterans Legal Services Program for as long as I've been doing veterans law, which dates back to the late 1990s, and I'm a particular fan of its veterans benefit manual. I can't imagine a lawyer practicing in this area of the law. It's very complex without the benefit of that outstanding publication. So over to you, Richard.
Yeah, Amy, good evening. This is Richard Hurley. I know one of the most significant laws passed by Congress this year was an overhaul of the VA disability appeal system. We have discussed this issue a great deal in prior shows, and we have concerns that the law has some significant flaws. It passed overwhelmingly in Congress. And now that the law has passed, can you tell us your thoughts about it and what veterans can likely expect in the years ahead because of those changes?
Sure. Well, so as you know, the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017 passed and was signed by President Trump in August of this year. It's been a long time coming. The VA has been pushing pretty hard for this, and various veterans service organizations have been pushing for this as well. And it's really an attempt to fix what many agree is a broken appeal system. Now, you may remember a few years ago, we heard a lot about the VA backlog and there being, you know, a million cases in the VA backlog. Well, the VA backlog that they were discussing back then involved only claims where there hadn't been an initial decision. So a veteran files a claim, they get the first decision on it. That's what they were referring to as the backlog. They didn't include the thousands of cases that had received an initial decision but had been appealed to the Board of Veterans Appeals. And that's what this legislation is talking about today, because it turns out that that was an even bigger problem that had been just waiting to be addressed. Suggested that if this problem of the appeals backlog were not addressed, it would come to a situation where people were waiting upwards of 6 years for their appeals decision. And, you know, for a veteran who's unable to work due to his or her service-connected disabilities and is seeking a total disability rating based on individual employability, that veteran doesn't have upwards of 6 years to wait for a decision on the claim. So something had to be done, and this is VA and Congress's answer.
Okay, and having said that, and David and I, you know, we've gone through the legislation. What's your opinion in terms of that, you know, fixing that backlog?
So whether this legislation will do it really remains to be seen, right? There are certainly going to be some areas that will need to be worked out. We really can't begin to speculate how VA is going to implement this legislation at this point. For example, one of the really helpful things that came out of this legislation is that favorable factual findings that are made by the regional office, in other words, findings that the regional office makes that are favorable to a veteran, can't be overturned by the board or any other higher review authority unless there's clear and convincing evidence contrary to the favorable finding. So what does this mean if we're looking at it in the light? What's the best outcome for this? Well, this means that, you know, nowadays you might see the regional office concede that or find that something happened to a veteran in service, like a knee injury or something like that. And then the case gets up to the Board of Veterans Appeals, and the Board of Veterans Appeals makes the exact opposite finding, concludes that the knee injury didn't happen in service. Well, that can't happen anymore under this legislation. That seems to be what the legislation, the intent of the legislation. But could that mean that maybe the regional offices will be a little more hesitant to make explicit favorable factual findings? Well, we can't speculate. We'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Richard, if I could add some thoughts here. One thing that that's concerned me, and it's interesting, Amy, how you noted that you know, that the VA has been pushing for these changes, and one of my overall concerns is that while some very major veteran groups signed on to it, including going back to last year, that perhaps this legislation, it smacks too much of an effort by the VA to make the VA's job easier, and quite possibly, I understand what you're saying about we have to see how it all pans out, but quite possibly making it easier, in my humble opinion, for the VA to deny claims. And I'll be more specific, because it appears to me under the legislation that the VA's duty to assist, statutory duty to assist, now ends once the initial decision is made. So it no longer would exist at the post-review stages, and it won't exist at the BVA stage. And for me as a practitioner, and I realize, you know, you and the attorneys of the National Veterans Legal Services Program have far more experience, including corporate experience, than I do, which I certainly value your judgment on this. But it seems to me, from my experience as a practitioner representing veterans, that we have lost a valuable tool that is supposed to keep the system as non-adversarial as we can. And that's, you know, once you remove the duty to assist, it by default is going to become more adversarial. And that's one of the things, that's not the only thing, but it's one thing in the legislation which really concerns me, so that you know, the post-initial decision review individuals and the BVA will now have the law behind them to avoid having to be helpful. Not that they're that terribly helpful now, but they're even going to be less so, which I think is a sign from what you were saying before, that this is a reform that's really been pushed by the VA. And any thoughts on that? On that issue?
Well, yeah, I think you have some valid concerns for sure. But, you know, for a veteran who has good representation, it's not going to be that much of an issue, because the veteran's advocate will be able to collect all that evidence that you would otherwise be relying on the VA to get. And so the veteran with a good advocate won't have as much of an issue. Now let's talk about the veterans who, you know, don't have lawyers or other highly qualified advocates. What happens to them? So the first thing I'd point out is that while it's true that the duty to assist, as we now know it, doesn't apply under this new legislation after the rating decision, there still is a duty to assist. In other words, say a veteran has met all of the evidentiary thresholds for triggering VA's duty to assist him by setting him up for a VA exam, but the regional office doesn't give him that exam. Well, the board still has to review the record to determine whether the duty to assist was satisfied below. So we won't be in a situation where, you know, the RO fails to fulfill its duties to assist the veteran, and then that's it. That's the end. The book is shut on it. The board still has the obligation to determine whether the duty to assist had been satisfied while it was before the regional office, and if the board concludes that the duty to obtain an exam had been triggered but not fulfilled, then the board would be obligated to remand the claim for the regional office to go out and get that exam.
I see. And that is an important point. And I understand your view that a veteran who is well represented should be less concerned about that. I will make the candid admission that even though I've been representing veterans for quite a few years, I consider it kind of an extra security blanket, if you will, to have that the duty to assist argument where we can remind decision review officers, which will no longer be used, and also BVA judges, you know, that we are asking them, and we, as we routinely do, that if there's anything that they've seen that we have not pointed out that they believe would help the veteran's case, either in other facts or in other theories, perhaps, that they bring those to our attention for the benefit of the veteran. And some people might say, well, that means the lawyer isn't doing his or her job properly. And I would say it could appear that way. But on the other hand, the law is so complex, and it's also subject to different interpretations, I think, as we all know, that right. It certainly helps to have that duty to assist at later stages. If we could touch on a couple other things about that law and get your thoughts about this reform legislation, because it's also my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm mistaken, but that the VA has approximately 18 months, and maybe it's longer, to actually work out how they're going to implement this new legislation so that we're not going to start seeing the new options for a while, and it's unclear to me how they may or may not grandfather in, you know, the literally hundreds of thousands of cases that are in the post-NOD stages already now, or, you know, even before the legislation passed in 2017. Any thoughts on any of those or maybe other issues that I haven't even mentioned?
Well, yeah, I would point out that, well, you're right that the effective date of the law itself is not until February 2019. The VA is already taking affirmative steps to deal with current cases using this new system. It's what it calls the RAMP pilot program, and it's going to start reaching out to select veterans and informing them and giving them the option to opt in to this new system that would create the different lanes, if you will, at the board that have been created by this legislation. So they're going to start testing it out on current cases. So you may actually see some of your cases going through this system a lot earlier than 2019.
Well, that's interesting. I was not aware of that. I had recently, just in the last couple weeks, read in a VA press release how they've got this, how they've announced a new nationwide implementation of a program they had just started testing apparently earlier this year at select offices, where the program is supposed to give or supposed to promise veterans And this isn't part of the repeals legislation that Congress passed. This is apparently something separate from that, where if a veteran wants to present a claim ready for decision, and this is apparently not the same thing as the other program that they had, you know, the expedited program a few years ago, but a new program that if a veteran and a representative is ready to submit something and they've done everything ready for a decision, in other words, they've taken care of a medical exam, CMP, DBQ, et cetera, and all it needs is now a decision, but the VA would promise then to issue a decision within a certain period of time. And what I noticed in the press release about that was it said that all the VSOs have been trained on that. And immediately I thought, as an accredited lawyer, I thought, why haven't I heard about it, and why hasn't the VA made any effort to bring accredited lawyers in? Because we represent a lot of veterans who we may be representing them on appeal, but we discover they need to file a new supplemental claim, and perhaps it might be an appropriate thing. But I've got other concerns about it because I'm very suspicious about the VA trying to push its work, its duty to assist, and its other work onto the veteran, and then saying, you know, you can use this program, we'll make a decision within 30 days or 60 days or whatever, but you have to have done all the work and then certify with your VSO. Apparently it requires VSO involvement. So, you know, this new process, I don't know if you've had any experience with it, but I'm kind of naturally skeptical of things that the VA is doing that they really tout as being great things, because there can be problems behind that. Any thoughts on any of those things, or any more about the reform legislation that you can share with us?
Well, yeah, I think, again, your concerns are valid. Again, I worry more about the veterans who don't have ready access to legal advice or, you know, a VSO with a lot of knowledge and experience in this area, because they can be easily swayed by the communication by the VA. For example, with the appeals modernization legislation, you know, the letters, we don't know what these letters are going to necessarily say. We know that they're going to, the letters that will inform the veteran of the option to opt into this new appeals processing procedure. So we know the letters will probably tell the veteran that his or her claim will be decided a lot more quickly if they opt in. But what they might not tell them is that the duty to assist no longer applies, or it might not be very clear from the letter that the duty to assist no longer applies, so you should only really opt in if you believe that your claims file has all of the information necessary to grant the claim. And, you know, as you mentioned, this is a really complex area of law that is growing more complex day by day. And oftentimes,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, a veteran may feel that he has all of the evidence in the claims file to grant the claim, and it might not actually be the case. So I worry a lot about veterans who don't have ready access to good, solid advice about which process to choose, and might be easily swayed by communication from the VA promising a more swift determination.
Oh, right. I understand that. And one thing about the new options from this reform legislation, when it does get implemented, is it's my understanding that a veteran, once they file a claim and there's been a decision, that they'll have one of several, you know, pick one of several options. And one of those options is to file a new supplemental claim, and they'll preserve the effective date of the original filing if they do that within a year. But if one of the reasons for this reform, and I realize there's multiple reasons, but if one of the reasons was to try to keep veterans' claims from being on a perpetual hamster wheel of endless claims, appeals, remands, back, is that to tell a veteran that one of your choices is, okay, your claim's been denied, but you get to file a new supplemental claim, and now you get to try to guess a second time what we're looking for without much in the way of an assist from the VA, that, yeah, as you said, particularly if they don't have a representative, you know. But I see that as another concern. I applaud the Congress, and it's amazing how the Congress, which is so deadlocked on partisan grounds on practically everything else in the country as far as problems, that they're practically unanimous, or literally are unanimous, in reforming these things. It's kind of given me the impression over the last year that veteran issues have become kind of a third rail, where no one wants to be viewed as opposing veteran issues. But on the other hand, it allows whoever is really driving the train, which I think is the VA a bit too much, to basically hoodwink people in Congress who don't bother reading the legislation or don't really understand it. But anyway, before we move on, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm listening to both of you, and as I'm listening, I'm thinking of all the clients that we've been representing over the last 6 years, and the confusion that they have when they walk in my office over the claims that they've been working on over the last 5 years before they walked into my office. And then I'm hearing about, you know, what Amy's saying, you know, the analysis of the new legislation. And I got to say, I'm a skeptic. I know David's a skeptic, but I'm a bigger skeptic than David. And David's been doing this a lot longer than I have. And I'm really concerned for our veterans, because it just seems to me that we're throwing more confusion out there to these veterans. And what I've seen, my experience has been, when they get the confusion, then the wall goes up, and they say, "What the hell? I'm just not going to pursue it any longer." And I see that as a real issue. How do you feel about that, Amy?
Well, I would point out, to the credit of the people who backed this legislation, is that there's another provision that requires more specificity in the notice letters and in the rating decisions. So the notice letters under this new, you might be from, well, I know you two are familiar, but to the listeners out there who have been through the VA claims process, you might be familiar with the notice letters that VA sends out when you file a claim. And the letter tells you, in very general terms, what evidence you need to substantiate the claim, and that the VA will help you get some of it. But in the new legislation, the notice letters are supposed to be more detailed. And in the rating decisions themselves, if they deny the claim, they have to make a specific identification of the favorable findings to the claimant. And we talked a little bit earlier about how those findings will then be binding on subsequent decision makers. And it has to tell you very clearly what elements are you know, what parts of the claim have not been satisfied. In other words, what evidence, what more you need to prove in order to get your claim granted. And it's supposed to be very clear about that. Now, do I necessarily think that these letters are going to be as clear as they should be, or that the legislation requires right off the bat? No. Do I think that there's going to be some litigation at the Veterans Court about how specific these letters have to be and what's a satisfactory explanation under the statute? Yes, I think there will be a lot of litigation about a lot of these issues that will come up. But, you know, hopefully we will get to a point where the legislation and the rules will be implemented as intended, which specifically with the rating decisions is supposed to give the veteran more information, clearer information than what they currently do under the current system.
Well, those are great points, and I appreciate you highlighting those for us, Amy, because that's one area, that particularly the notice letters, that that I've not put probably enough, given enough credit to, but that is super important. And I've found in cases that a lot of these cases that we have on appeal, if someone from the VA would simply pick up the phone and call us, which granted, yes, they sometimes do, and Richard can share that experience as well, but that if they would just pick up the phone and say, and just talk over the case, they could save a heck of a lot of time. They could save hearings and, you know, work things out a lot faster. Yeah. So go ahead, Richard.
On that note, Amy, I guess it's been a couple of months now. I got a phone call from a DRO down in St. Pete, and out of the blue, he just said, look, you know, I'm looking at this case, and, you know, you got a PTSD by way of MST, and, you know, I see you got an IU claim, and we don't have a hearing scheduled yet, but you want to resolve it. I almost fell out of my chair.
That's wonderful.
Sure. And we did, and it netted a check to the veteran about $135,000.
Oh, wonderful.
And then about a week later, he called me again. He
That's
said, hey,
great.
Rick, I got another case of yours. You want to get rid of it? I said, sure. And so we had we got rid of that one too. And I said to him, I said, what's up? You know, I don't get it. And he said, this is the way I handle all my cases. He says, I don't like hearings. There's no reason for us to go to a hearing. I'd rather pick up the phone, especially when I see there's a lawyer on the other side, and talk about the case over the phone and figure out how we can resolve it. Do we need to do anything further on it to develop it? And let's get it done. So I said, why is everybody doing this? I think there's 28 to 30 down there in St. Pete. And he said, some just want their hearings. They want the case to go to a full hearing. And he said others are concerned about a supervisor because, well, everything we do gets reviewed. So, go ahead, David.
What I wanted to add is kind of a counter example to what, excuse me, what Richard had just said. I've had two DROs in the last few months that have both told me that we've reached the end of the fiscal year, but this was over the last few months, where they said because they were under a lot of pressure at the St. Pete Regional Office to keep from having a backlog of, you know, initial claims, that the DROs were being pulled off of any of the DRO, the decision review officers I'm talking about, were being pulled off any of their appeal cases to work on the initial claims. And one of the two DROs I had talked to was a DRO that I'd had a DRO hearing for, decision review officer hearing, in July of 2016. So, you know, well over a year by that point. And I was just following up saying, you know, any prediction of when, and that's when he told me, said he's being forced, you know, by the powers that be at St. Pete to work on initial claims, and it's not going to be until the end of the fiscal year before he's even going to get to it. And then I heard a similar story from another DRO that even though she was having to work on initial claims, she obviously somehow worked in to hold one of the DRO hearings that I went to, but told me the same thing, basically. There was a lot of pressure to justify that they, on the DROs, to justify why they're doing that. So I think with that in mind, it kind of explains why, you know, the St. Pete Regional Office seems to consistently carry, you know, what I will call a backlog of probably between 25 and 30,000 post notice of disagreement cases. It's very frustrating because we're waiting many, many years. But in any event, Amy, why don't we, if we could, shift topics and talk about the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. I know earlier this year President Trump nominated and the United States Senate confirmed some new judges. What can you share with us about those new judges and perhaps their impact on the court?
Sure. So President Trump nominated and the Senate confirmed three new Veterans Court judges, which was great because the court had recently lost several judges to retirement. And I was operating on, I think, four judges for a few months there, where there are actually nine judges on the bench at any given time. So Right now we have the judges who have been there for a while include Chief Judge Davis. Then we have Judge Schulman, who's also been there for a while. Judge Bartley, who is a former NVLSP employee. She was nominated and confirmed in 2012, I believe, along with Judge Peach. The three new judges include Judge Michael Allen. He is also comes from Florida, so all the greats come from Florida. he was a professor at Stetson University, the law school there that has a really strong veterans law program. Their students are always competing every year in the Veterans Court, National Veterans Law Moot Court, and they always have a very strong showing. And then Professor Allen, Judge Allen now himself, was often invited to speak at various court-sponsored and other advocate-sponsored conferences, like the Judicial Conference, and he would give his thoughts on recent cases out of the court, and they were always very, very insightful. So we're happy to see him on the bench. We've seen some decisions come out of his chambers already that we've been quite happy with. He recently sent one of my cases to panel, meaning that the case will be decided by three judges and will become law in the books. And it's a really interesting issue, so I'm excited to argue before him. Another of the recently confirmed judges is Judge Meredith. She comes from the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, so she has a strong background in the area, has been around for a while, and she'll bring a lot of knowledge to the bench as well. And then we have Judge Toth. He hasn't really been involved in veterans law, but he's a veteran of the United States Army, the United States Navy. He has a deployment to Afghanistan under his belt, and after law school, he clerked for a federal circuit court, and then he worked at the Federal Public Defender's Office for a while before coming to the court. So we're pleased to see him on the court as well, and look forward to seeing more of his decisions.
Well, that's great. I would also, it's my understanding that Chief Judge Davis is also another former Stetson law school professor, although he's been on the court now for a while. So it's interesting that, for the court now there's two former Stetson professors, and the Stetson Veterans Clinic, is, as you pointed out, is very active, and that's probably reflective of, it's geographically very close to the VA in St. Petersburg and the huge veteran population in the state of Florida is well served by having that program. So thanks for sharing your thoughts on those judges, and I hope it will certainly help the court and veterans. Richard, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, David. Amy, let's move on with what are some of the other hot topics in veterans law that the National Veterans Legal Services Program is concerned about right now? Specifically, is your organization getting involved in the issue of health problems caused by the open burn pits used in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Sure. Well, I've certainly seen burn pit cases in our practice of even just claims going up to the Veterans Court. Often it'll be a veteran who served in Operation Iraqi Freedom or Operation Enduring Freedom, who is exposed to smokes from burn pits and will be claiming some respiratory disorder as a result. VA's position on this issue is kind of hard to nail down. I recall that there was the VA has a manual that all of its decision makers follow called the M21. And I recall that there was at some point some language in there that said that if a veteran who served in Iraq or Afghanistan says that he or she was exposed to smoke from a burn pit, you should just take the statement as proof of the exposure because there were so many of them in those areas. And I tried to find that language again today, and I couldn't find it. And I dug a little deeper into VA's website, and it has a page dedicated to burn pit research. And it seems to suggest that the research isn't really there to support a conclusion that exposure to toxic smoke from burn pits causes any detrimental health effects, to include respiratory disorders, which is a little surprising to me. Mm-hmm. But the good news is that the Senate recently passed a law that requires the VA to set up more extensive research and to track the health effects of burn pit exposure and come up with more data on such effects. And that passed the Senate recently, is in the House now, and hopefully will become law.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Richard.
Do you see this as this generation's Agent Orange?
Yeah, it's certainly been referred to as that. You know, it's hard not to see similar patterns, to include that the research has found that the same kinds of dioxins that were found in Agent Orange have been found in burn pits. And as you know, those dioxins were ultimately linked to numerous adverse health effects, to include lots of different types of cancers. But it took a really long time for us to get there, and we're still working on figuring out the full effect of Agent Orange on veterans who were exposed to it in Vietnam. So it's only, you know, who can guess how long it will take us to really understand the full picture and effects of veterans who were exposed to these toxins via burn pits.
Yeah. David?
Well, I wanted to add about that two things real quick, is that there's a new documentary film coming out. Its premiere showing is a week from tonight in Los Angeles, but it's a crowdfunded documentary, meaning they have to sell enough tickets at different locations. And the documentary is called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. And it's about the burn pit contamination. The director of the film is a guy named Greg Lovett. He lives in Holland right now. He's an American, but he lives in Holland. He directed and produced the film, and the premiere showing is a week from tonight in Los Angeles, and I'm promoting to have it shown here in Brandon, Florida, and there's another promoter for the Veterans Theater in Tampa, Florida, and at least a dozen or more locations around the country, so people can find out more at the website tugg.com. I mentioned that because perhaps, Amy, you can help get the word out about that. The other point is that I'm reading a book right now called The Burn Pits. It's called The Poisoning of America's Soldiers, and it's by Joseph Hickman, and it was this book that led to the documentary being made. But as I'm reading this book, it's a real eye-opener. The author's done a lot of research and even has touched on the issue of where some of these burn pits were located. We're also on sites where, back when Iraq had, chemical weapons and mustard gas and other things, those were the same locations, and there was never any soil testing to see if the soil might have been contaminated with mustard gas and other things. So there's a lot to be developed in terms of investigation. May not be possible now, but tough issue. So,
yeah.
So I guess we'll see. And I certainly know we can count on the National Veterans Legal Services Program to help lead the way on those and many other issues. So, Amy, I appreciate your insights tonight. Can you tell us how listeners can find out more about the organization, how they can support it, including through donations, like what's the website, those kinds of things?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us at www.nasinnational.org. That's nvlsp.org. And on our website, you can find lots of resources about our different programs. If you think we might be able to help you, there are links for you to follow that will put you in touch with the right person in our organization. If you're interested in any of our training materials or webinars, you can find those links there as well. And, of course, we are a nonprofit organization, so we always are grateful for any donations, and you can donate through our website as well.
Well, that's super. And thank you again for being with us tonight, and thank you and all the members of the program for the great work that you all are doing for veterans, and we wish you all continued success. And, of course, we'd like to invite you back to be on the show again in the future, so just keep us posted when it would be convenient, when you'd like to share more insights with us. We welcome you back on the show to keep our listeners updated. So thank you very much, Amy, and hope you have a good evening.
Thank you, and go Gators.
Thank you, yes.
Thank you, Amy. Go Noles.
It's a little inside joke for all the Floridians out there. But well, that's great. Thanks so much, Amy, for being on our show. And it sounds like the National Veterans Legal Services Program is continuing to do the great work it's been doing for decades. Again, its website is nvlsp.org. I know we're rapidly running out of time for tonight, Richard, so I just wanted to cover a few things and then turn it over to you. I mentioned that documentary film on the burn pits problem. It's called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisons Its Soldiers. Director is Greg Lovett, and it's based on the book by author Joseph Hickman, The Burn Pits. So you may want to check those out. You can go to Facebook and type in the Facebook search engine the words Burn Pit Documentary, and it'll pull up the Facebook page for this documentary. The first showing is October 9th next week, and showings around the country are scheduled. I encourage you to buy tickets. They can only be purchased online, and it's crowdfunding, so they have to sell a certain number of tickets to even screen the show. So over to you, Richard.
Yeah, and David, you said it's going to be shown around the country, and I know it's New York City and Las Vegas and Phoenix, Tucson, Colorado Springs, Columbus, Ohio, Naples, Florida, Tampa, Florida, and Brandon, Florida. Thanks to you, David.
Yep.
And Watertown, New York. Jumping ahead to the end of October, we have, that's Monday, October 30th, and I'm really looking forward to our guest, which will be, Rick Burns, the brother of Ken Burns, who will talk about his soon-to-be-released documentary entitled VA, The Human Costs of War. The film is due to be released in early November on PBS. Stay tuned for the specific date on PBS very soon. That should be very enlightening. And prior to Mr. Burns, October 9th, we have Lauren Price. He's the founder of Veterans Group called Veterans Warriors. She's a Navy veteran. She founded that organization along with her husband, Jim Price, who is also a Navy veteran. Then on October 16th, we have John B. Wells. John is a retired naval officer and is now a lawyer and the executive director of a nonprofit organization called Military Veterans Advocacy. Now he's going to be on our show, like I said, October 16th to discuss up-to-date news from D.C. And it's my understanding he's spending parts of the next month in D.C. lobbying members of Congress and meeting with VA officials to discuss veterans issues. That should be also another excellent show. Back to you, David.
Thank you. And looking ahead, one other guest we have planned is Vietnam veteran Brian Wizard, who is an accomplished writer, artist, and filmmaker. He'll be on our November 6th show to discuss his experiences in Vietnam and his life since the war and how he has coped with post-traumatic stress with his writing, art, music, and film. He appeared on our show in May, but he'll be back on November 6th, which is the week of Veterans Day this year, and he'll continue where we left off our discussion in May. Meanwhile, I encourage you to check out his website, which is brianwizard.com. Brianwizard.com. He has lots of books and artwork for sale, including among his books is the electronic or e-book you can download called Smoke Ships Always Leading the Way. Smoke ships were the helicopters. Brian was a door gunner on a smoke ship during the Vietnam War. And the regular price of his e-book called Smoke Ships Always Leading the Way is $8. But in honor of Veterans Day in November and Brian's second appearance on our show, he's reduced the price to only $1 if you buy it between September the 18th and November 14th. Again, go to brianwizard.com. I have a copy of the book. It's great. It's an easy to read because it's lots of great photographs. It tells a story of Brian's experience in Vietnam. It's a really good book, and I encourage you to check it out. So you can mark your calendars. Got a lot of good speakers lined up for you in the near future, and we'll hope you'll tune in. So back over to you, Richard.
Thanks, David. And before we conclude our show tonight, I'd like to remind our listeners about the VA's Coaching Into Care program. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help our veterans. Give the program a call, toll-free, 1-888-823-7458. It's ours on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners, if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Well, it's been another quick show tonight. It's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to again thank our special guest, Amy Odom, for being on our show, and thank our show sponsors for tonight's show, which includes American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases involving the VA. You can find out more about the law firm at the website CoreyandHurleyLawGroup.com. We'd also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and thank our listeners once again for tuning in. Hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, hope you have a great week, and good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.